When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed. Call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and Jitters barista, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin Janes, host of Fundle Bundle.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
I want to be married and have 100 kids so I can have 100 friends and no one can say no to being my friend.
I hate you!
Same kid. They cast the same kid.
All aboard for sales. Next stop, Cucamonga. Take your daughter to work day is today's subject for our episode of Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show where we get together every week and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office.
Mm. Very excited to jump into this episode today. I think as we were looking into different topics, this one stood out quite a bit because just in the way that it kind of speaks to Michael's psyche and personality, we get our first glimpse, I think, into Michael's upbringing or background or childhood. And we get to see kids eye-opening in the office, which is a totally different dynamic than what we're used to from kind of the cold, mundane day-to-day.
Definitely.
Yeah, this is like much more of a blueprint episode than I thought. When you think of this episode on the list of season two, it kind of you kind of gloss over a little bit.
Yeah, there's just like a couple of things that like stand out to me, but then
forget about it.
Get into this episode, it's thick.
I agree that there's a ton of stuff that I was very surprised by rewatching this, but this has always been one of my favorites. This
it's a great one.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. Yeah. But I just mean in terms of sort of the depth of character.
Yes.
Sure.
The amount of reveals we get throughout this episode is surprising.
Take Your Daughter to Work Day, Season 2, Episode 18, directed by Victor Nelly Jr., written by Minty Kaling.
It's a Ben and Jerry's flavor, yeah.
Who was it directed
Should
by?
Be. Victor Nelly Jr.
She grabbed me by the shoulders and she said, yes!
Different Nelly, I think. It aired on March 16th, 2006. In this episode, four children spend the day in the office. We got Toby's daughter, Sasha, Kevin's fiance, Stacy's daughter, Abby, Stanley's daughter, Melissa, and Meredith's son, Jake, who is there because he's been suspended from school. Mm-hmm. In terms of storylines of this episode, it opens with Pam explaining that she's really excited to see the kids. And she kind of confesses later that her one goal for the day is to befriend one kid or make one kid like her, which is not really the same as befriend, but we'll get to that. And then we've also got Michael, who, despite starting out the day kind of uncomfortable with the whole take your daughter to work day thing, he gets really into it, wants to impress the kids, bonds with Toby's daughter. And then we just have a lot of really fun interactions between Dwight and the kids, and a lot of the other characters, a lot of the ensemble get a little moment here and there.
I was going to say before we dive into this episode too, on the other side of this, we got a nice girthy mailbag to get into.
Oh yeah,
we got stuff we'll be jumping into. Got a little trivia, bit of trivia at the end as well.
Coming back.
Yep. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
Stick around.
I was one thing that I noticed in this episode is that in the early seasons of The Office, one and two specifically, you get a lot of little moments or vignettes, I guess you would call them, little scenes that don't necessarily develop much of the plot. They're just kind
of tableau scenes around
The Office. Yes.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I miss
much about like the show later as it goes on. But this is still season two, and they still take their time with stuff like that. Do you watch the deleted scenes for this episode?
I didn't get to for this one.
I did.
There's some great moments in the deleted scenes. If you haven't seen them, you should go and watch them on YouTube. There's one in particular where like Ryan just walks up to his desk and goes to sit down, and Sasha just like climbs out from under the desk, and they just like stare at each other for a second.
That's like bringing that up. Like a lot of times when I'm prepping for the show, I'll have it playing in one window on my computer while I'm doing other stuff, and sometimes I'm not seeing it.
Yeah.
And then you actually start to hear like how much silence and just space is once you're not watching it.
Exactly.
And Sasha wanders into Michael's office and they just stare at each other. And then the episode just moves on. Like, it's so weird.
And then he kind of smiles a little bit when she runs off. It's really, really, this is a really cute, touching episode through it. Like, to the end, I think.
These episodes get to breathe in a way that a lot of the ones that in the later seasons do not. Mm-hmm.
It just feels like the stakes are a little lower.
Yeah.
Whereas like every scene, there's not huge conflict necessarily. It's just these kids interacting with the characters on the show.
I made a note too that like, you know, kind of, you know, one of the main story points being that Pam just wants to make one kid like her. That's such a great conflict for the episode. Mm-hmm. It's so
that's small. Right up your alley. Yeah.
But yeah, even in terms of what's at stake and what the characters want from this episode, very little, right?
Right.
Pam has that small goal. Michael is just kind of there. He doesn't have a goal in mind per se. Once he starts interacting with kids, then it kind of changes the way that he thinks about having them in the office, right?
Right, right.
But you know, even with Jim befriending Abby, which we see, like it doesn't. Mm-hmm. He doesn't set out to do that, right? None of the characters set out to do too much, except for maybe Kevin with Abby.
I will say that you know, even though Pam's goal is small, make one kid like her. There's something about too, if she doesn't accomplish it, if none of the kids like her, mm-hmm. that's devastating.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The stakes, oddly, the stakes are kind of high in a really kind of pathetic, pitiful way.
And you see. And you see that with Kevin too, with, you know, he talks about how it's his fiance's daughter, right?
Right, right.
How quickly he feels desperate, you know. This is my file cabinet. Long beat. This is the partition between my desk and Angela's desk. She can see it. It's a partition. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Uh-huh. This is the wall.
He doesn't understand how children
children
work.
In a deleted scene, he asks Angela, he goes, "Angela, is it okay if I'm the head accountant today?" she says, I don't want to set that precedent.
Yeah. She's like, she's a bright girl. She'll see right through it.
He's so hurt.
Cold. Mm. So cold.
Yeah.
I guess we can start by talking about Michael. I think he's the one who enters first.
Yeah, I think so.
I was kind of surprised by Michael being so dismissive and not happy to have kids in the office. You know?
Yes. That's a good point.
It seems kind of dissonant with what we see from Michael later in the show, where he, you know, is so excited to see kids. He tries to hold a baby every day.
Right, right. Right?
And this is kind of crude, but he says later, there are two things that I've known. I love sex and I want to have kids. Right? And like, it doesn't make sense in a way that he is so dismissive of having kids in the office because he can't make the jokes that he wants, right?
Right,
well,
right.
You could argue, but this episode, like, the stakes do become very high because Michael sort of is forced to gaze, sort of have an existential moment with himself, watching him as a kid and realizing that he didn't grow up to be what he wanted to be or get what he wanted to get in terms of having a family. And so surrounding him with kids is such a great way by the writers to draw that out of Michael. And we see that actually in a deleted scene, it happens with Pam too.
Mm-hmm.
We have Abby notices a drawing on Pam's desk and is like, "Did you draw that?" Brutal. Oh yeah. Do you like drawing? Abby says, yeah, I want to be an artist when I grow up. Pam says, me too. And Abby says, but you're already grown up.
So
it's
cold.
Heartbreaking too, because Pam, the look on Pam's face is
God, yeah.
It's the same look Michael gets
when
he's confronted about like, you know, so did you ever get married? No, I guess. So you didn't get to be what you wanted to be. Like, I guess not. And it's really heavy.
Really heavy.
It pans around and you kind of see some of the characters struggling with the same thing, but back to your point, Edwin, I wonder if like this episode essentially is the start of Michael really liking kids mm-hmm. and starting right. to accept that, okay, if I want to be a family guy, I need to like kids.
Well, here's a fan theory of mine.
Go ahead.
How many?
You're not a fan. You're a professional.
I guess so.
This is a professional.
This is an
theory.
Expert theory here for you. How much interaction does Michael have with children before this point, really, in his adult life? He's not really friends with people who have kids, like Todd Packer, even though I guess Todd Packer has a daughter. I'm sure that Michael hasn't really interacted with her much.
Daddy's here for you, my widow angels.
We learn later that Michael lost his sister's son, Luke, in a forest.
Lost him in a forest.
Right, and was excommunicated from the family pretty much at that point. So, you know, I think it's kind of fair to believe that, like, he's not really close with any families. He's not really close to any kids. And so this episode is the beginning of his, like, you know, pursuit of loving little kids.
Being a little kid lover.
Being a little kid lover.
I think there's one moment we have to remember, and it's the Halloween episode in this season, where at the end, Michael is at his house, and the kid trick-or-treaters come, and he drops the candy. Right. He's like, all right, go ahead, you have it all, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's such a warm moment at the end of that episode where he has to fire someone, and he does a pretty terrible job of it. So I think that is a moment, right? It's a, it's a gradual thing, I think, as Michael, number one, gets older, and number two, gets to interact more with children.
Yeah.
We do see him kind of warm up to this idea and really come around to this idea of being a father, right?
Right.
You see the way that he embraces Sasha and someone who gives him a little bit of attention and kind of reciprocates and laughs at his jokes. And I think there's something really to that. Yeah.
You know, we got through the entire Michael versus Toby episode. We never brought this
up. We never brought this up. The child that he bonds with is Toby's daughter.
Mm-hmm. And then he has a very just relaxed, normal, heartfelt conversation with Toby when he's, you know, Michael's sort of with a 1,000-yard stare, just kind of thinking about not having kids and everything he failed. And Toby comes in and asks him, and he goes, oh, you have to ask me that because you work for human resources.
Mm-hmm. Toby goes, it's true. With a quick look to the camera, look back to Michael. Yeah, it's true. Really, really good.
But then we see them talking, and Michael actually asks, you know, he basically asks if he can be Sasha's godparent. Which is crazy, given how much he hates Toby.
Also, Sasha's like 5 years old.
Yeah.
It's so funny to watch the gears in his mind turn.
Yeah.
Where he thinks about, you know, is it too late for me to have kids? And, you know, Toby's you need to have a wife or at least a girlfriend. Maybe you could be a foster parent or something. And Michael said, or biologically. Like, you can see, and then the leap that he makes to, does Sasha have a godfather, right? There's something so funny about, like, him trying to cover this ground in his head. Because there's another scene where Michael comes in, it's a cold open, he says, I can't think of the episode off the top of my head, but he says to Pam, I just watched this thing on Oprah last night. About wanting to adopt a child.
Right.
And Pam kind of talks him out of it. And then, you know, if none of us have children in 30 or 40 years, right?
Oh, God.
Yeah. And Pam finally agrees. Yeah. So there's another
Roy's
element
sister
to that.
Looked into it.
Right. Yes, that's right. Yeah. The application alone can take 10 months or something like that.
10 months. I don't even know if I'll still want one in 10 months.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. I think it's funny that this moment kind of slid under the radar for our Michael versus Toby episode. How much were you expecting Michael to say something really terrible to Toby in that moment?
I know, right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, the look he has on his face before he says, or biologically, it does feel like, oh, this is...
He's about to say something.
This is when Michael really hates Toby. But he's had a lot of hating Toby moments before this.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not totally entrenched that he's just automatically allergic to everything Toby says. But he really does look like it for a second.
Or
biologically.
Yeah. I was like, what's the line he says to Toby here? And it's really nothing.
What a nice kind of human moment in this episode as well. To have Toby just kind of show some concern and some empathy, you know, and to kind of reach out to Michael in a way that maybe we wouldn't expect later on. Or later on, when characters make these sort of overtures to Michael, he tends to reject them or yell or something like that. You know what
Since
I mean?
When is it illegal to put caprese salad anywhere?
I think there is something too that, like, you know, having the kids around, like, gets everyone to behave a little bit differently in the office. And so there's kind of some moments that you're seeing that you wouldn't normally see in this episode. I was reading too, Jenna Fischer used to, I didn't even know this, she was writing a blog the whole time She was on the show, or at least back in 2006 she was. And you can read her blog about this episode on TV Guide. But she said that it was fun having all the kids on set. Everyone had to be on their best behavior. No cursing and no dirty jokes allowed. It was a bit of a challenge. We aren't a G-rated bunch by nature. So, I mean, the exact thing that Michael's worried about at the top of the episode is actually what was happening on set, which I thought was pretty funny. But, yeah, I think it's just, you know, having the kids around and seeing how the characters have to change a little bit is really fun.
I think one thing that I noticed, too, in this episode is that they have to do a little bit more of them actually pretending, or I guess, showing them doing work in the office, because they have to show children interrupting that.
Yeah.
So there's a little conversation between Michael and Meredith where they're talking about spiral paths or something, and Jake is throwing erasers at Michael. And then later Michael is on the phone with somebody when Sasha comes in. But for that scene to feel natural, they have to show them working so that they can be interrupted.
Yeah.
You know? Which I thought was kind of interesting, because they don't show that nearly as much.
No. Yeah. I did make a note that this is like the most professional like that we've ever seen Michael.
This
is the most he's worked. This is the most he seemed to just kind of be focused on work. it's
by
weird.
By far.
It's a little weird.
And Stanley too.
Yes.
Again, in a deleted scene, we see him just imploring Melissa to pay attention to what he's doing so he can see why Dad's so cranky every night when he comes home.
Let's talk about Stanley. That's like the big moment from Stanley. One of the most iconic Stanley moments
there is.
And he delivers it in such a great way.
Well, he's been... So his daughter's been a subject since the beginning of the day, because Michael walks up and says, you know, hey, Melissa, she's growing up to be a stone-cold fox. And he's like, she's in middle school. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, she becomes obsessed with Ryan, wants to talk to him all the time, and she's telling him all about Jitters. I love that, like, that scene where you see him talking, Melissa talking to Ryan about Jitters at the Steamtown Mall. You see Kelly watch it, then Kelly talking to Stanley, then Stanley yell. It's so boom, boom, boom.
And Kelly is in the window. It's like, you so see her good. Through the window standing in the annex with, like, I think her hands on her hips. Like,
It's such a, like, that story just happens so quickly. And the fact that this episode's written by Mindy Kaling, too, you know, that she understands, like, the comedy.
Well, and they allude to this as well earlier in the season. In the sexual harassment episode, Michael talks about how Stanley's got that picture up next to his desk. And he says, that's my daughter. She goes to Catholic girls' school. I'm taking it down right now.
Yeah.
Michael saying that is in the credits for several seasons. It's that moment when he goes, best part of my day.
Oh,
walking
yeah.
by Stanley's
right,
desk.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. And it's Catholic part of the credits of the Centerfold. Theme song going over it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I just love the way that Stanley, like, delivers that line. Boy, have you lost your mind? Because I'll help you find it.
Jesus can like, walk through that door anymore.
So great. Yeah. If you don't stop sniffing after my daughter, she is a child. Like, there's
it's Ryan's
so good
eyes,
the way that he, like, yeah.
Ryan's the best person to say that.
Delivers it so well. Because Stanley, I don't think, is shown to be as cranky.
No.
At this stage in the show. Yeah.
No, he doesn't get riled up like that.
I played this. I made a mashup of like bloopers a while ago.
Yeah, I remember,
early on. But one of them was Stanley's bloopers from that scene, and one line they cut because they crack right in the middle of it. But I bet they would have kept it if they didn't. When he's just like, "How about Ryan's going to get sent to prison?"
He's like,
and what they're going to do to you in there is nothing to compare to what I'm going to do to you before you get in there. And BJ Novak just breaks. Like, I think Stanley was probably just. They just let him go off.
Improv. Yeah. Oh man, I want to know. That is a legendary moment in the show. I think certainly one of Stanley's best.
And last episode we talked about Florida Stanley. This is a different Stanley. This is a motivated, protective, adult Stanley.
Girl dad. Yeah,
That's right.
Well, we've also
you've been meatballed.
We also have, of course, continuing Michael's storyline here, where he is. He catches Dwight after Sasha comes into his room. He catches Dwight telling the kids like some horrible story about
He plays them Green Sleeves.
Plays them Green
traditional
Sleeves.
Traditional English
on the
ballad
recorder.
About the beheaded Anne Boleyn, and then Strule Peter from 1864.
Michael says they don't want to hear stories from your Nazi war criminal grandmother. And, you know, and who likes Dane Cook?
Right. What a moment, Dane Cook. Yeah.
Out of the Mouths of Babes. Michael Scott is freaking cool.
Yeah.
The Dane Cook was a big timestamp moment for me here. The other one.
I mean, definitely. He was in his peak in 06. Yes. Like, peak Dane Cook.
The other one is at the beginning where he says, Miss Beasley, if you're nasty. When he walks in during the cold open and he alludes to a wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah.
And Pam says, you can't be nasty today. And she points to the side. Right. Yeah.
Michael's physicality with the uncomfortableness he has with kids early on in this episode. Steve Carell's really, really good at that. He does it then and then again when Pam's like, Michael, shouldn't you say something? Because he's the manager and him's kind of reluctantly like... Oh, they're fine, and then
I love that he says, "How do I say this?" Like he's going to lay some pearl of wisdom. And I am like Superman.
Like they're really trying to figure it out.
Too. Right? Yeah. And this is Gotham City. Yeah.
Like, that's Batman. I work with a bunch of nerds.
But then he discovers that he can be kind of the Funkle, the fun uncle.
Mm-hmm.
He's telling them all about Fundle Bundle.
Gets Ryan to go to Dixon City.
Where Michael's mom lives.
That's right.
Break into her house, pretty much.
Well, no, if she's at the pool, the back kitchen window should be open.
Ryan does get the tape, brings it back, and then, of course, it's revealed that, Michael on this show as a young boy said that that he wants to have hundreds of kids so they can all be his friends and no one can say no to being his friend. And even Edward R. Meow is shocked.
The way that the puppet conveys feeling awkward is so incredible.
It really is.
Last episode we talked a little about nonverbals and stuff and how characters communicate and like that they can get that sort of a read from a puppet on a TV screen within a screen. Like,
well, also listen to this. I'll play the drop at the top again. There's like a model train going in the background of that TV set or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the sound design of listen after his quote, like the train stops. Like it's a record scratch. Listen to this.
I want to be married and have 100 kids so I can have 100 friends and no one can say no to being my friend.
Like it fades down and it kind of stops. And then there's a long moment of the puppet looking around.
You think about this episode.
I hate you!
Retheth.
You think about this episode. When you think about this episode, you could almost think of it as a bottle episode. It's all in the office. It's all just kind of like simple interactions with characters we've seen besides the guest stars, the children guest stars. Mm-hmm. But, for them to just have that little Funnel Bundle clip with a puppet they designed and a child actor who's supposed to be young Michael Scott. I mean, he's got such a like alfalfa kind of look to him.
Yes.
He looks like, oh, this kid probably doesn't have a lot of friends.
Just a romantic little nerd.
Way that quote implies that Michael make friends and that his solution is to like have a bunch of children
and force them
or like what he sees kid. Is like yeah
no
exactly
one can
his
say
future
no to being.
Or his goal or dream or whatever it is, you know, like what he wants to be when he grows up. There you go.
Yeah.
Right. Is so sad and tragic, right? Yeah. Everyone feels it in the moment.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, and Edward R. Meow, you know, for being the host of a children's show, like he could have jumped in with some words of encouragement.
Right, exactly.
Instead of just being, you know.
Nice talking to you, Michael.
Another moment I hadn't picked up on before, speaking of Edward R. Meow, is when he first says, oh, and that's the host, Edward R. Meow. And Jim goes, that's really funny. Mm-hmm. The way Michael then looks, he kind of goes, yeah, like the way he says
he doesn't
that is,
get it.
He doesn't know who Edward R. Murrow is.
Yeah. Right, right. Which is,
and like, that's what a difficult bit of acting to like convey that. That's it's so good. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Famous radio host for anyone who does
that. Oh, yeah.
I do love that when child Michael shows up, everybody's like, oh, like there's like a kinship in the room where they're like, hey, look, it's Chet from the news. Checking in with Chet. Right. And they like are having fun and they're kind
TV.
Of enjoying this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he is on TV. Yeah.
Yeah. Dwight. So yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dwight.
Well, it's both of them. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that it's just such a great moment to see the office kind of working together, you know, and feeling together. They're eating pizza. They're having fun. Like, yeah.
It's really well written, too, the way they're able to convey Michael's just how everyone feels about him in that moment because juxtaposed with like having the kid come on right before him who is on TV, who like achieved all his dreams and immediately with Michael right after, it just it makes the emotional weight of it so much heavier. Yeah. It's really, really good. Yeah. And then it happens even again with Pam. Again, I mentioned that deleted scene where she gets called out by Abby.
Right.
Not becoming an artist.
Abby.
So Pam's really having the same kind of experience as Michael, but on the other side of the coin, because she's engaged. But even that, she's little bits we see her struggling with it here. Mainly yeah. when we see Roy getting along with Meredith's son, Jake. I'm just like, right. I love this kid.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
And,
right. Oh God.
And Pam sort of spent the episode just being like, oh, that kid sucks. And then eventually Jake's the one who she actually
That's
gets along
right.
with.
That's right.
So Pam's also on this sort of existential road next to Michael at the same time. It's not quite as potent as Michael, but
yes.
If Michael is thinking about himself as a potential father, I mean, mm-hmm. it stands to reason that Pam, engaged to Roy,
definitely.
Is thinking about herself as, you know, a mother. What would it be like to have kids? Right?
Well, that's more of a right than Michael.
She says it at the top of the episode. She's like, I want to get better at kids liking me because
exactly.
I'm going to get married.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's clearly, that's even her convincing herself that she's ready to be married when mm-hmm. she knows she isn't.
And you juxtapose that with Jim, mm-hmm. where he's so easy and casual with,
right.
With Abby, right? He does such a good job.
Read from the mixed up files of Mrs. Basil E.
Connects
Frankweiler.
Through the book.
I will admit, I did not know that was a real book.
I did not know. I thought
Wait,
it was
really?
A fake book.
You guys didn't read that?
Mm-hmm. No.
It's best book. It is really, really good.
Well, wait, if you had to spend a night in the Met or the aquarium, what would you pick?
The Met.
Definitely the aquarium.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, I know that's not the answer.
I don't see anything you didn't read it.
Yeah. No, I never read it, yeah.
No, that's great. Oh, they take all the money out of a wishing fountain.
Is that... Well, so
the
okay.
kids get some pocket change, mm-hmm. yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're living in the museum.
I thought it was a fake book based on series of unfortunate events or, mm-hmm. you know...
Is this where Dwight gets the idea to steal the chandelier?
He might.
I wanted to go back to something you mentioned.
I go to Berlin.
Right, yeah. She's never taken another lover.
I don't show up.
Yeah. When you... You mentioned this episode as a blueprint, and there's a moment that felt so much like it established a pattern for future episodes. And granted, this kind of happens at Christmas party as well, but where there's a party or an event in the office and something goes wrong or somebody's made to feel bad, and then it kind of ends or falls apart in a sort of way. And especially this one, I think this is the first one that if I'm thinking of this correctly, where something goes wrong for Michael and Michael feels bad and he exits the party, right? And in other parties, he gets kind of angry, and he kind of ruins everything. Later, when I'm ruining everything, you're going to wish I was on your side, right?
Yeah, uh-huh. yeah.
But yeah, this is a moment where something awkward happens, and there's a big silence, and Michael kind of gracefully exits, where he's like, I have a load of work to do.
Snakes,
take a
slice of
pizza. Yeah, delicious pizza.
Yeah.
And then he leaves, right? But that felt so... it was just a perfect example of the way that those events seem to happen later on in the show.
And totally. and also of just like the idea of having the kids in the office that everyone has to act differently, right? I mean, he would totally, you know, he would have done something if
Lashed
the kids
out.
Weren't there.
Yeah.
We also get, speaking of blueprints, we get just a tiny window into Meredith's life. Just fact that Jake goes, Meredith! When Dwight calls him a horrible little latchkey kid, gives you a whole kind of sense of what's going on there, which was great. And then, of course, Toby as a father.
This was the first time I ever tried to read what was on Jake's shirt.
What does it say?
I already forgot your name.
Oh, my gosh.
He says to Mr. Poop.
Yeah.
Right? Later on. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that perfect?
Yeah. I love it. I love, speaking of the Mr. Poop, I loved all of Dwight's
interactions. Yeah, we should talk about Dwight in this episode.
So good.
All his interactions with the kids. I think he interacts with all the kids. Maybe not Melissa.
She's in the room when he plays the recorder song.
Yeah. But when Toby and Sasha walk through the kitchen at one point, Dwight's just in there eating something. And he goes, hello, little one. You are the future.
Yeah, and well, Toby ushers him past, like, going, like,
come on. Hello, tiny one. Yeah.
It's like, yes, of course, Dwight is going to treat all the kids just like adults. Yeah. And he does for the whole episode.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, there's what sets up Dwight putting on this little show for the kids? Nothing. Just that Dwight is doing his job as assistant regional manager, right? There's nothing that prompts him. Like, Michael doesn't tell him to do it. Pam doesn't tell him to do it. Angela doesn't tell him to do it. Like,
he was the youngest fruit, and the youngest always raises the other children.
For the kinder.
Yeah.
My grandma turned.
There's another great moment when Jim is now friends with Abby and joking around, and they shake hands, and he's like, ah, you broke my hand. Oh, man, mm-hmm. that hurts. Like, and Dwight is like, obviously always gullible, is like, no way. Like, little girl, come here. Shake my hand.
You're so weak. I do, yeah, and then his interactions with Jake and the way that feeds his interaction with Angela, right? Mm-hmm. Jake just kind of comes up and makes fun of him. Mr. Poop, that's your name, right? Mm-hmm. And Mr. Angela, Shoot. Yeah, exactly. They have another moment in the kitchen where Angela kind of expresses that, you know, my father was a very strict disciplinarian, right?
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind a pair of well-behaved boys. The look that Angela gives Dwight after he calls Jake, well, he goes like, well, you're just a horrible little latchkey kid. And like, you know, and Jake kind of runs away. Yeah. And then there's just this beaming look on Angela's face looking at Dwight.
Yeah.
And you just realize that, she's a really terrible person. She's
for what? Insulting a child.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of Jake, he goes to Dwight's computer and is like, do you have any video games?
And yeah.
Like, Dwight's got tons of video games on there. We've seen him playing them.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's a key component of the Megadesk.
That's right.
He plays StarCraft. He plays Second Life.
Yeah, what the hell?
I have commanded vast virtual armies. He comes in as Kerrigan, Queen of Blades.
Mm-hmm.
That's season 8 for Halloween.
Right. Anything else from this episode?
I mean, I think...
In the notes?
I think...
Creed in his four-toe foot.
Mm. Yeah.
That's a good...
I never caught that he says, well, the hair covers it.
I noticed that too.
Yeah. I never covered
that. The hair covers it mostly. Yeah. Really? It's not even in the subtitles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Sneaks through.
I did really love, I've always loved when Sasha comes up to Phyllis and just says, are you Mother Goose?
Yes. Oh, that's a beautiful moment. And Phyllis seems so torn. Mm-hmm. like she's offended, but also almost maybe wants to tell her yes, you know?
Oh, one other thing with Toby, when he takes her over to accounting and asks Angela if she can help work, and Angela says no, we'd have to explain everything. It's probably easier if we do it ourselves.
Oh, okay. Like,
all right, I wasn't expecting that. let's go draw. Good father in action moment.
They directed Sasha to kind of go into Michael's office and just start playing quietly without even acknowledging him, I thought that was so well done. Mm-hmm. It's like how a child would do it, because they're not comfortable enough to talk to the adult, but they want to just play.
Yeah, she just sees all the toys.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got the most kid-friendly room in the whole office. Yeah. He's got everything in there. Mm-hmm. And he gives her watch at some point.
Yeah.
Which Toby returns later.
Yeah.
Not the first time his watch ended up with Toby.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. Right.
I think, we talked about this a little bit, but I think the moments that Pam gets at the end, where Pam does get kind of lifted up by her interaction with Jake, I think
Jake wants to use the shredder.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Which Abby did not.
It's very small, but it is significant in a way. Like you said, the day would have felt like a failure if she didn't get it. And, you know, we talked about Pam's journey, but Pam's journey often is so, you know, there's a lot of heartbreak and there's a lot of struggle and a lot of, like, pain and emotional pain that we see from Pam, you know?
Yeah.
Especially in the early season when everybody's making fun of her, or Michael especially. Yeah. You know, please don't throw garbage at me, right? Now there's butter on my desk.
Yeah,
that's what I was gonna say. Yeah, there's a lot of little moments like that, and to see her just like feel good at the end of the day, I think was really important. And then the way that the show really masterfully still does the Jim and Pam dynamic at this point, when they're talking and we know that Jim is gonna go on a date, and Pam turns to Jim and says, well, my theory is, and Jim is already gone. Like, he's left to go on his date. And there's even, like, while Michael and Dwight are singing, which we haven't talked about yet.
Yes.
There is a bit of Jim leaving in his car. Like, they thought that was a valuable shot to show Jim leaving while Michael and Dwight are singing.
Oh, Crosby, Stills, Nash, interesting.
Yeah.
Still in those early days where they could play up the tension of Jim and Pam. Mm-hmm. Maximum effect. God, don't you miss that?
I do, yeah.
Another moment from this episode that I, of course, we have to mention is Michael signing up for the dating site with the little kid lover.
Oh, yes, yes.
Of course.
You know, so that they know where his priorities lie.
He makes a grand declaration. I, Michael Scott, have signed up for online dating.
And then of course, as you mentioned, the
song.
The
we gotta talk
of this.
Yeah, that Michael episode. Has so Ryan beautiful. Get his guitar, but he doesn't know how to play it.
Right.
That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And we get Dwight playing the guitar, foreshadowing his moment with Country Roads with Andy later on. But he sings in such a quiet voice, you know.
Yeah.
And Michael is trying to sing out really loud, you know.
Yeah. And in a very out of character moment for Dwight, even in this episode, him being like, and they do, your parents love you very much. Because, of course, you know, Dwight likes the tough love.
I love the way they look at you and cry. You know? And so, like, yeah. He's not afraid to go for it. Yeah.
The only other time I can loves think a high of, harmony. The, of the Michael Dwight duo like this, where Dwight's got the guitar, is Diwali.
Diwali, that's very true.
And doing the Diwali, the Adam Sandler Diwali.
I'm thinking too of the Dundies.
Oh no!
You have won a tiny Dundee. Sing it, Elton. You know.
I was thinking of that, but the Chair Model's grave.
Oh yeah.
And you know the rock and roll.
Yeah. When they sing the rhythm and blues. No verdict was returned.
Jump cut tonight.
Oh boy!
Final thoughts? Any other sweet moments?
What? Now, this is such a great episode. We get an insight into Michael's psyche. We get to see Michael kind of this is character growth for Michael in a way. We get to see Jim and Pam kind of interact, and we get to see all the characters in the office interact with children, which is just a bit of newness that we don't really get in these early seasons.
This is a perfect example of the early quiet episodes where it's kind of depressing. There's a lot of about it that makes you kind of sad and feel bad for certain characters like Pam and Michael and even Dwight at certain points, and then ends on a hopeful note, just a small hopeful note. Just
that's the beauty.
Know.
That's season two in a nutshell right there.
Pam befriends one kid. It's the kid. But but she got one.
Hey, that kid turns out to be a great stripper.
You get him, Jakey. True. Yeah.
Meredith, most supportive mom in the bunch. Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah. A really great episode. One of my favorites from this season.
Sent me back.
A beaut.
Sent me through a near rewatch, full rewatch of season two.
Yeah. It's always worth it. Yeah.
It's so good.
Every time I go back to season delivers. Two, I'm like, man, this is one of the
best. This is the best.
The tone. I love it so much. Yeah.
This is the best. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Well, hey.
You guys want to open the mailbag?
You guys want to meet in the conference room real quick?
Mm-hmm. Oh. You want to go to the conference room, do you?
I don't know. Do you...
These names are for the same things.
We have mail. We do mailbag segments inside of the conference room. Have you ever
noticed
this?
How about they're always conference room, but there's different types, and this one could be...
Right now. Conference room. Topic, potpourri, let's go.
When we're doing mailbags, we'll just, do it all.
Okay.
Yep. All right, where to start here? Let's start with this. We got an email from Danielle with an update. She says, I'm the person who wrote in speculating that Jan knew she was pregnant at the dinner party.
Oh.
Yes, which a lot of other people then chimed in on. It was a good fan theory.
Mm-hmm.
Called an ironic twist of fate. Or research for your podcast, but little did I know when I emailed you that I myself was very newly pregnant.
Oh my
gosh. Now 11 weeks in.
Twist.
And the morning sickness is finally winding down, but I feel even more confident in my previous statement. Even if she wasn't trying, expecting to get pregnant, she had to know by then.
That's what crazy.
Anyway, let me know if you have any name ideas, because I already have a girl and a boy, so obviously Asterd and Chevy are taken.
My first thought was... Little Michael Scott.
Yeah. You know. And Jim says, I don't like that joke.
Yeah, I don't like that joke. Yeah.
Call if it's a boy, Jimothy. Mm-hmm. And if it's a girl, Pee-Pee.
Mm. Pee-Pee Halpert.
Yes. And then she says, Peep-ha. Have a great weekend. Congrats on 50 episodes.
Mm-hmm. That's so nice. Thank you so much.
Quick note on all the questions. I know we just don't have the bandwidth to respond to everything. But thank you for signing him in. Yeah, we do try. Mm-hmm. And then other thing too with voicemails, a lot of great voicemails. It does help if they have them nice and short and to the point. We really appreciate all the love you guys give us. But yeah, the shorter, concise voicemails are much more likely to be played. I've never actually said that before, but I don't have the time to edit all the voicemails. So let's get down to the point. Appreciate Jeez. It. Yeah.
All right. Well,
sorry about that. Yeah. Guys. Anyway,
guys, go easy.
One thing
on Alex.
I think that I've really loved about doing the show and getting voicemails and messages and comments from people is the extent to which, like, The Office fans is kind of a community.
Oh my God.
We can kind of be a little bit of a connector for people.
Definitely.
You know? Yeah. I think we had somebody write in, I think on Facebook, and I'm sorry, I don't have your name in front of me, but she wrote that it made her feel less alone about loving the show so much. And like, here's the thing, like, you are not alone. There are so many of us. Yeah.
That was another message beautiful. From Kayla, right? We keep mentioning her.
Shout out to Kayla. She's posted a ton on our Facebook page and sends in a bunch of memes. reference things that she's posted for us without shouting her out. So, yes, shout out.
Huge, huge shout out. Okay, let's move on here. Okay, here's a little bit of detective work for us that we were given by Melanie in Petaluma. And I have the audio to review this, so we're going to listen. But she says this. I was listening to the Florida Arc episode in the car last night on my way home, so naturally I had to watch it when I got home. My husband and I noticed something interesting in the Tallahassee episode. In the scene where Andy and Pam are in a standoff over who's going to cover reception and answer the phone, everyone starts yelling at Andy to answer it. It's kind of a jumble, but you can clearly hear Stanley yelling, "Get the damn phone." However, as we know, Stanley is in Tallahassee at this time, being Florida Stanley, not in the office. In fact, the very next shot is Jim and Stanley talking at the hotel after that scene.
Interesting.
Yeah, the very next scene is Florida Stanley saying one of his mottos, "Drive fast and leave a sexy corpse." So she rewatches a whole bunch, and she says it's either Creed, Daryl, Kevin, or Toby are the only remaining men in the office, and they all can maybe capable of sounding like it. So let's listen to this.
Oh, nice,
let me see what
nice.
You guys think. Again, the specific phrase is "get the damn
phone."
So
intrigued.
Yeah. Get the damn
phone. Get the phone.
Somebody pick the phone.
Get the phone.
Get the damn phone.
You're the closest one to it.
Fine.
Wow. Yeah.
One more time. It.
Somebody pick the phone.
Get the damn phone.
You're
the
closest one to it.
Fine.
Is it? Who else could it be? Out of
super
those,
wait, is it Kevin? Play it one more time.
It could be Toby, Kevin, like, Creed, or Daryl are the only four guys there.
It sounds like Kevin more than any of those other people.
Somebody pick the damn phone.
I think it's Creed.
You think it's Creed?
I don't know. That was what I thought just now.
I know, but it sounds like Stanley. I'm with her. It sounds like Stanley.
It does. I
get the phone.
Somebody pick the damn phone.
Somebody says something at the top.
You're the closest one to it.
I hear Creed. I hear Creed.
Yeah.
But there's also like just a sound that someone goes like, oh, at the top.
Yeah.
It sounds like Stanley.
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm very interested to what the audio is when do you remember when Kevin is trying to answer the phone and he's covering for reception?
Yeah.
Your call is very important to us. I wonder what the audio is there. Like what the fill is, you know?
Huh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Point.
Yeah.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
I need to go.
Hang on. It is our time. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Edwin, you have something, yes?
All right, so this question comes from Kenzie on Instagram, or I guess this is more of a story than a question, but I'm going to read it. Here we go. Let's see. Just to let you guys know, funny story, I played softball in college, and for my walk-up song, I chose an Office remix. Usually when it went up, it only played the first 10 seconds. But if you listen, there's a part in the middle where Michael is saying the "no, God, please, no" line, which never played until one game where I was up to bat. While my walk-up played, there was a timeout. During the timeout, they turned the song up, and the whole stadium was laughing so hard when they played the "no, God, please, no" part very loudly. Maybe we can use this in a mailbag. So this is the walk-up song, and we're just waiting for that moment. Just imagine going up. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
That is awesome.
Yeah. That is so great. I was kind of expecting there to be like the drop after that, though.
Nope.
Like in like a Skrillex song.
Maybe Andy.
Oh my God.
Womp, womp, womp.
If you want to hear that, that's called the Office theme song by Skibo Beats Trap Remix. Mm.
Maybe Andy could include it in his next fail video compilation, right? Yeah.
Wow.
What are you doing? That's just video of us with you putting vulgar noises over it.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up here, we got a voicemail from Lindsay in New York who, this happens quite a bit. We have people who are still catching up with our episodes, so they'll send us something about something we said like months and months ago, but it's still worth hearing because this is about her rebuttal to you believing that Cafe Disco is when the show jumped the shark.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
No way.
This is my favorite topic.
I'm just anticipating that she's not going to agree with me.
Let's go.
We'll see.
Hey, guys. This is Lindsay from New York.
Sounds like Holly.
I am just calling in reference to the episode discussing Nate and then a mailbag. And then also getting into the comments about the real downfall of The Office. And I disagree with the statement of the Cafe Disco. Because I don't know where you guys work, but I come from a long line of retail, which is one of the fuckiest jobs out there.
Hey, and I came from retail too, for sure.
I have to say that it was moments like that that kept you going at a job like that, because everything could be sucking, and the customers and your coworkers, and just everything gets real heavy at times. And then I don't know if we were all partying in a closet to music or anything, but something funny would happen, or somebody would, we would play music for the day. And yeah, people that normally wouldn't be, you know, chipper, you know, tapping their foot, getting into it. So that's all I really had to say, not to go on and on, but it was moments like that, that yes, maybe everything was perfect in that, you know, in that near hour of just, or a few hours of just, you know, having a good time, having some coffee or extra coffee that day, giving you that extra energy to get through and keep you there another year. Too much time. Good job, guys. I'm obsessed with the show. It's so awesome. Best Office podcast out there by far.
Oh my gosh.
Have a great day, and I will continue to listen. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Wait, thank you so much, Lindsay.
Awesome. Lindsay, thank you so much.
Truly,
Lindsay.
Truly that's appreciate it. Man,
that's such a great voicemail, and you make a fantastic point. I almost feel bad for my comments about Cafe Disco. I do agree with you.
It's a great reminder.
Like, that's true. Like, you know, I work in the film industry, but in an office a lot of the time, on the like preparation side of shooting a television show or a film, we're usually crammed into a crummy little office and, you know, work under high pressure environment. And, you know, we like to have fun too. And the moments when we can break and, you know, we'll even have like little, you know, like poorly planned birthday parties in the middle of the day that people have trouble focusing on because there's so much going on and it's just a really awkward little party. But I know what you're saying. I agree and I disagree. I like those moments in real life.
I agree.
I don't know if I always like them on the Office.
Someday, and hopefully not too far in the future, we'll go all the way into Cafe Disco.
Yeah, we will.
I'm very excited for it. I think you know your voicemail reminded me of so I used to work in retail too for a couple years, and there was this one night, you know, when we were closing, and we had a manager who was a really like fun manager, and like closing is always tough because, you know, it's at the very end of the night and store's been closed for a while and you got to make sure everything's perfect, right? Mm-hmm. And his last thing for the end of the night was he played Turn Down for What? And like whenever it would break, like he would point to somebody else and they had to dance. Oh, he was like, gosh, we have to go all the way through or we're not going to leave. So like, and yeah, he would point to people who wouldn't normally dance, you wouldn't normally expect to, and they all had to dance before we could leave. So it was a very fun closing experience. Yeah, exactly. But to your point, like it makes those kinds of experiences a little bit lighter, kind of relieves the tension a little bit. So yeah,
definitely. Mm-hmm. What an awesome voicemail. Thank you so much, Lindsay.
I still like that episode.
Yeah. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Just like every episode.
Time for some trivia.
How about one more here?
Okay. Yep.
Let's just do one more because we have a reaction from, this is from Nikki in Toronto. Okay. Chiming in about our saying that like kind of Val's character is very shallow.
Okay.
And she does not blame Val for that. She blames somebody else.
Okay.
Hey guys, my name's Nikki. I'm calling from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Love the podcast.
Me either.
Love everything. You guys do so much fun. I literally was laughing out loud in public during the Nate episode.
It was very embarrassing.
But thank you. So I have, I guess, a little bit of a hot take on your Florida arc episode. There was a moment when you folks were talking about the shallowness of Val's character and how it's like weird that she would not admit to Daryl that she had a boyfriend and then invite him into the office to bring food, which I totally agree with. However, my hot take would be, I think it would be very like Andy's character to completely disregard anything that's going on between Val and Daryl in the office, not paying attention to any of that, overhearing somehow that Val's boyfriend does have a catering service, and just going ahead, making that decision without getting Val involved at all.
That's a good point.
And most likely Val couldn't say no, because possibly from the earlier phone call, Brandon was already having some suspicions about what might have been going on in the office. So I don't blame Val. For some reason, I blame Andy. Anyways, love the podcast. Keep it going. Think you guys are doing great. And thanks for taking time to listen.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Nikki.
Thanks, Nikki. Yeah. I had not thought about that. That is a great point, and I think that that is a much simpler explanation of what happened. So not Val's fault. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great call. I mean, yeah. You think about Andy, you know, wanting to put on these sort of things for everybody. Jamaican feast, man. Yeah. Right. I think about when he has the pizza party. Pizza party. What's different about it? Well, it's fresh tomato, a dollop of mozzarella cheese. Uh-huh. It sounds like regular pizza. Yep. Mm-hmm. You need one more element for it to be a party. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. But no, that makes a ton of sense that like Andy would just do it kind of blindly to,
kind of ignoring whatever
dynamics might actually be in place. So that's it's a great point.
And then it makes sense because Val would feel much more caught in the moment of like, this is over my head here.
That's a good explanation of what happened. I mean, I think that I like Val. I just wish that like the writers had treated the
character a little bit
better.
They didn't do a great job
of
developing.
I would totally
agree with that.
I think that she's like, you know, obviously seems like a cool, smart person within the show, but
doesn't seem like a match for Daryl. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
know. You guys familiar with the Bechdel test?
Yes.
I can only think of one moment where Val passes the Bechdel test.
Oh, sorry, but you're talking about when there's a female character in a TV show, their conflicts all are about a relationship with a man.
It asks whether a work features at least two women who talk to each other about something other than a man.
Okay.
Yeah, which is crazy how many things seem to fail this test. But I can only think of the moment where Val is talking to Phyllis and Val is all dressed up at the Christmas party. And she's like, that's a lovely dress. She's like, purple is my favorite color. Something like that. It's something so small. But other than that, I can't think of a moment, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. I mean, the whole office, you know, fails pretty miserably at that.
True.
But, you know.
Definitely.
And we actually have another voicemail. We'll save this for another episode. But we do have another voicemail. She has a whole theory about, we mentioned on our Phyllis episode of like when Phyllis starts to get sassy with Angela and she has this power. Mm-hmm. Well, later episode, there's a really good theory from a fan about when female characters gain confidence in the show. But
for another time. Great.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Last quick fact just to share, because we had a few people share this with us. Mm-hmm. So we want to correct this. This is the loud music reference that Kevin makes when he's talking about playing the loud music. And we had someone from the military call in and talk about all the Noriega stuff. We've had a few people correct us that no, the joke he's making is specifically about Waco and the Branch Davidian standoff with David Koresh, that the FBI and the ATF used loud music against their compound because we hear Gabe say, we don't want another Waco on our hands. And Aaron says it's pronounced Wacko.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yes.
That's so good.
So, yes, we just wanted to... thanks for that correction. We appreciate it.
It's pronounced Colonel. It's the highest rank in the Army.
That's right.
It's pronounced Cornell. It's the highest rank in the Ivy League.
Wow, great. Yeah. We're just always learning about history doing this show. Thank you, everybody, who writes
in. We didn't even get... We had a whole other voicemail about a historical fact.
Oh, my gosh.
But we got to save some.
For another time.
We'll save it for when Gabe does his thing, his Lincoln... monologue. We'll save the Lincoln voicemails until
you know what, we'll put all these ones we teased on next week's show.
I need to see this play like I need a hole in the head.
Yeah.
All right, it's time for some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
All right, today's trivia is based on the first half of Michael's birthday, which is the episode.
How did you prep for this one, Sean?
Impulsivity and inattention to detail.
Because right after Take Your Daughter to Work Day, Michael's birthday will just start playing on Netflix. So that is the subject of today's trivia. Question one. What is the name of the calling cards pyramid scheme that Michael joins?
Oh, it's like something... it's like patriotic or freedom or something America.
It is like a U.S. flag graphic.
That's what I... Okay, that's
but
what
But it's called airtime prepaid phone cards.
Okay.
What is the name of the guy who recruits Michael into the scheme?
Let me tell you about Phil.
Who does Michael share a birthday with? A celebrity.
Ava Longoria.
No. Ava Longoria.
That's this way
correct.
He has an icebreaker. If he ever meets Terry.
I've asked that question before.
I know. I've thought that you had
no,
asked
No, this is the problem is I don't remember the answers.
I know. Yeah, right.
I remember the questions.
Right.
Sex, Eva Longoria. Steve Martin, Terry Hatcher.
And what? Terry Hatcher.
Sounded like at the end you said something interesting.
That sounded interesting.
Now I get that joke because he's in love with Terry Hatcher. He's not even thinking about meeting Eva Longoria. Question five. Michael's suit was not made in Italy. Where was it made?
No, Romania?
Bulgaria.
Bulgaria.
Can you name
his mysterious suit?
No, that's later.
Oh, that's different.
A woman delivers a package. Mm-hmm. Okay, can you name the shipping service? You'd have to stop it to look at her hat or something.
It's not like DHL or something like that.
It's not. It is like DHL, but it's fake.
It's yellow and red, right?
It is Hawk Transport and Courier Service. Why couldn't Michael ride the pony at his seventh birthday?
Because he got a rash.
He got a bad rash
and
from
his
pony.
And my mother was rubbing cream on me.
For maybe 3 hours.
And by the time I went back out, they had already packed up the pony and they were around the block.
Yeah, the pony was already in the truck around the block. All right.
I hate you!
All right, final question. What is... The woman who comes in and delivers a package, Michael mistakes her for a stripper.
You're so hung up on this woman who delivers this package.
Did you only watch the first half of this episode?
That's right.
Go ahead.
What is in the package that she delivers, and who is it from?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's from Jan?
No. They breeze by it. Mm-hmm. It's so quick, and I never caught it before. This is my big question for this.
Is it calling cards from Phil?
It is not. But good
guess. It's a birthday gift.
It's a birthday gift.
It's from his mom.
It is from his mom.
It's a little picture of Luke Perry.
It's, I'm pretty sure it's James Dean on a motorcycle underneath a bridge.
Luke Perry's friends never treated them this way. Yeah. Later in the episode.
Yeah.
And Dwight is the only one who signed it.
Yeah, that's right. But anyways, yes, that is what she is delivering, a framed poster of James Dean on a motorcycle under a bridge from his mom. Mm-hmm. That wraps up.
Who lives in Dixon City?
That wraps up trivia, and that wraps up this episode. Thank you guys for listening and for writing in. Please, we always need you to write in and send us questions or comments. If you disagree with us, we'd love to hear about it. 503-694-9314 is our phone number. You can call and leave us a message. You can email us, mspodcastcompany.com. At gmail.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company. We're on Twitter at Michael Scott Pod. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com. And a special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who runs our social media and designs all our artwork. And this episode was recorded in the OG studio, the Ward Brother Residence in Portland, Oregon.
Casa de Ward. Please remember to rate and review the show. It helps us, helps people find the show. Everyone who has written a review or sent a rating, thank you very much. And I'll say it a million times, thank you, for as always, for listening, for interacting with us, for rocking with us. We truly appreciate everyone. It makes doing the show so much more fun, you know, to know that we are interacting and engaging with everyone.
Yeah, we love you guys, and we'll see you next week.
Pippity Poppy, give me this up.
Yes, sir.
And teach your children well.
Why does he own a guitar if he doesn't know how to play?
I think he thought his ukulele skills would transfer.
Only go by and feed them on your dreams.
My theory is that
the one they picks, the one you'll know by. Don't you ever ask them why. If I told you, you would cry. You just look at the man's side and know they love you.
And they do. Your parents love you very much. One more time.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.